Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Answering the Call, offering a glimpse into the spiritual journeys of local priests, deacons, and religious. And now, Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli.
Hi there, and thanks for joining us on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 and streaming live on stgabrielradio.com. I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. And I've been doing this program for almost 3 years now, and in that time I've interviewed many priests, deacons, religious, but I haven't yet had the chance until today to interview a very important vocation in any diocese, and that is the vocation of bishop. And I am delighted to have our very own bishop, the Most Reverend Frederick F. Campbell, with us today on Answering the Call. So hello, Bishop Campbell.
Hello, thank you.
And we really appreciate you coming in today to do a little double duty here at St. Gabriel. I know you're taping your own program from the chair with Bishop Campbell, and you can hear that program on the first Tuesdays of the month at 5 p.m. And you have agreed to be on a guest on this program, so we do appreciate that very much. I know you're busy. And in fact, it's probably a good time, Bishop, to thank you personally for all your tremendous support that you've shown Catholic Radio in our diocese. I know that you recognize its value for the new evangelization, and we truly appreciate the blessing of our shepherd on our efforts here. It's really key.
Welcome.
Really key to have the bishop behind us. So as we do with all our guests, we like to take our guests all the way back to the beginning, to your family of origin, because that's often where we're formed and where the seeds of faith might first be planted. So first, tell us a little about your parents and that you grew up with in Elmira, New York.
Yes. Well, it was in upstate New York. It was near Elmira. We're more associated with a little town to the north of that called Horseheads.
Oh, okay.
And it does exist. You can find it on the map.
I didn't find that in my research, so there you
right.
go.
But my father's family had lived in the area, as far as we can tell, since 1790.
Wow.
They came up right after the American Revolution. My mother actually grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and but then met my father, and of course the rest is history.
Now, your mom was Catholic.
My mother was Catholic. My father was not. He was
not Catholic.
Part of a Calvinist a tradition.
Okay, so was it your mom then who kind of raised you in the Catholic faith, taught you the basics?
Well, of course, when my mother and father married, there was the agreement and expectation that the children would be raised Catholic. And, of course, at that time, Catholic parents had a very, very strong sense of their responsibility in the moral and religious education of their children. My mother, shortly before she died, told me a wonderful story about my older brother. It was a very difficult pregnancy for my mother because in the seventh or eighth month of her pregnancy, she had a burst appendix.
Oh.
And, of course, my brother was born prematurely. And at that time, after childbirth, a woman would be in the hospital for 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
And my mother said, you know, I sat there and in the hospital, and I thought, I'm going to have to teach this child his prayers. And I only know them in Polish.
Oh, okay.
So she spent the time learning all of her prayers in English so that she could teach her children.
So is that what you call the curriculum of prayer?
Well, you found that phrase. So where did you?
I did. I did a lot of research on you, Bishop.
Oh, I see. Yes, I called it her curriculum of prayer at particular ages. We were expected to know certain prayers, and it continued up until the time of confirmation.
So did your dad practice any faith himself, or what was his attitude towards Catholicism?
Well, I never heard my parents discuss anything like religious differences, let alone have an argument over it. My father's family did have a pew in a church in town. It had been part of the family, for generations. But I never heard them discuss that. Now, my father was a marvelous model in teaching of really ethics and moral behavior, especially social ethics, how you treat people, how when you give your word, you stay with it. He used to say, don't sign your name frequently. But when you do, remain true to it.
Mm.
Because your word is your bond, as you sign it. So there was a very strong influence from my father as well. But my mother, coming from a Polish Catholic background, introduced us to all of the Polish traditions and whatnot. And my father always joined us for those. In fact, he never complained about any of the fast days. He fasted during Lent with my mother, never ate meat on Friday.
Wow.
And it was a difficulty for him because he was a fisherman, and my mother was deathly allergic to fish. So our Fridays were really fast in abstinence, and my father always went along.
How marvelous. Yeah. Now, I know from researching your story that your call to the vocation of priesthood would happen a little bit later in life, but in reality, you were always raised with the concept of vocation from the very beginning, weren't you?
Yes. It was very much a part of the religious atmosphere. I like to tell the story of being prepared for First Holy Communion in second grade when the sister who was teaching us the catechism suddenly stopped and said to us, "Boys and girls, do you realize at this time the Holy Spirit is hovering above you? And he's going to call some of you boys to be priests and some of you girls to be sisters." And I like to say I ducked.
Now, why was that? Was that idea not appealing to you at the time?
Well, it
or just fear?
it just didn't seem like that was the call that was going to be given to me. Even in second grade, I developed a very deep interest in certain issues, and I always thought, well, that's where God is calling me. If he gives me a particular talent, maybe that's the vocation as well.
Yeah, and before experiencing a call to the priesthood, you first felt another calling, maybe to a future in mathematics.
Yes. That was disabused when I was in college.
It wasn't the right formula, huh?
Oh, well.
That's a math joke, but.
Oh, I see. No, it was in a class that I knew I could slog through it, but I did not have that intuitive sense that I think is so important in a field of study.
But to share the story about mathematics where, as a youngster, you kind of almost had an inspirational moment as you saw math all fitting together, all like...
Oh, it was surprisingly in geometry. Now, I tell high schoolers that, and they look at me in disbelief. How could you possibly have a mystical experience in geometry? But it was just that that sudden, profound insight of... C.S. Lewis calls it being surprised by joy.
Hmm.
And I had a sense of wholeness of things. It was marvelous. I thought it lasted maybe a few seconds, but my mother told me it was about 20 minutes. And finally, she just shouted out, "Stop wool gathering and finish your homework."
But you know, when I heard you share that story, what occurred to me is when you see that everything was fitting together in this perfect order, I think it was like a precursor to the divine inspiration for the priesthood, because, you know, we have the creator and creation. Everything fits together. There's order. It's not haphazard. It's not chaotic.
Right.
It's complete order. And I think you were kind of glimpsing, you know, that order.
Well, it was a gift, actually. It was, I call it insight. But I thought at that moment, well, this is my vocation.
So you'd kind of follow that path a little bit. You'd end up choosing St. Lawrence University in Canton, New York. But then you'd kind of leave math and pursue two other passions of yours, language and history.
Right.
And this is where you'd really begin to pick up momentum in these areas. You'd continue on with your education, your master's degree in 1967 from The Ohio State University, and then in 1974, a master's, or I guess doctorate was...
73. Was the actual award.
73.
March of 73.
So you had all these degrees in history. I mean, this is really where, you know, you're feeling that this is my calling to teach history. I read that you even taught history for a couple of years at the Pontifical College Josephinum, having no inkling whatsoever that one day you yourself would be a seminarian. Not there, but still a seminarian.
And now vice chancellor of the Josephinum.
Yeah, right, now vice chancellor of this very same institute. But you're there as a math professor and...
Oh, well, no, history.
I'm sorry, I keep saying math. History, rather.
I taught history there to college seminarians. And also at the time, there was a high school at the Josephinum, and I taught juniors in high school, which was a real pleasure. And remarkably, two of the students I taught are now priests of this diocese.
Oh, how interesting. Interesting. And I'm sure you're recognizing his voice, but we're talking with Bishop Frederick Campbell of the Diocese of Columbus, who's sharing his own personal vocation story today on Answering the Call on St. Gabriel Radio, AM 820. I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli, and so glad you're tuning in today. So, Bishop Campbell, your teaching career would take you out to California to teach history at the California State College in San Bernardino. And in this unlikely place, God would make his true call for you clearer through a group of Mexican religious sisters.
Right.
Tell us that story.
Well, they had come up to the city from Mexico City in order to teach at the Hispanic parish in town. They wanted to receive their teaching certificates from the state of California. And one day they showed up at the college, asked to see the president, and they were there in his office, and I think that made him extremely uncomfortable. But he remembered that he had a Catholic in the history department, so he sent all of the sisters down to me, and that is where I first met them. They came down the hall calling out my name. Aww. Professor Campbell, we've got to talk to you. And I helped them for several semesters to actually obtain their certificate. Marvelous group of women. They were happy. They lived a very, very simple life. But I was invited as a way of thank you on their part to attend Mass and then have breakfast with them, which was a kind of extraordinary experience, since I could not eat inside the cloister. They could not eat outside the cloister. So we met in a large room, and at the table there was only one place setting. And we sat there, and they watched me eat breakfast. But they did join me for coffee.
Okay.
And that's when one of the sisters told me that they had prayed, and they believed that God wanted me to be a priest.
And what was your reaction to that?
Astounded. I thought when Sister Rosa said, Professor, we have something we need to tell you, I thought they were going to ask for help getting a master's degree. But they
thought you were going to get off easy on that one.
Right.
Now, 2 years later, you would enter the seminary at St. Paul, in St. Paul, Minnesota. But what happened in the 2 years' time that obviously something these women had said to you planted the seed, and you realized this is where God is calling?
Well, as I look back, the seed was planted much earlier. It's just that sometimes you mistake certain signs. Sometimes you don't particularly nourish the seed that you've been given. And I remember being in California, and I had some marvelous students. But I never felt like I was in the right place. Now, I really didn't attend to that feeling, because I swear 80% of the people who live in California feel the same way. So I just thought it was part of the culture. But after you hear it so clearly as that, you begin to think back. And in retrospect, you see various moments. I went back to that moment doing geometry. I remember a moment in English literature where the teacher in high school gave us a list of 30 titles. They were poems, short stories, novels, and whatnot. And we were to read all 30 titles during the year and do a report on them. And I remember her telling us in September, now don't wait until April to do this. So there was one evening where I took three of the titles, and all of a sudden, as I was reading, I thought, this is good.
Mm.
This really is extraordinary. And being touched by the extraordinary character of what I was reading, the next question I asked of myself is, how must I live? What must I do to become worthy of the good that I have experienced?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, of course, it can be taken as a literary response, an aesthetical response. But I looked back and I thought, no, that may have been one of those seeds.
Yeah, yeah. Another glimpse, another brush with the divine, mm-hmm. because again, that goodness, that appeal to goodness, because in our hearts, that's what we're called to, right. an attraction to things that are good, beautiful, truthful.
Right.
You know, I was watching your interview on the Journey Home with Marcus Grodi, and you said something very interesting about vocation. You told Marcus that there are three principal vocations that every mm-hmm. person has. You talked about first, we have a vocation to life, how we live our lives to honor our Creator. The second is a vocation to holiness, that we're called to live holy lives, and that when we strive to do that, to live holy lives, as you say, we'll be having much better clarity on the third principal vocation, and that is a call to a particular state right. of life, you know, whether it's single, married, or religious. And I never heard anyone say it in that manner, but it really makes total sense, and I may use that in a future book, but
okay.
I'll credit you if I do, Bishop.
Thank you.
But it's this third principal vocation, the vocation to a particular state of life. That's what we're most interested in for this program. Tell us what you mean when you say that a call to ordination is a 50-50 proposition.
I say that because that vocation is half a growing realization, a personal realization, that you are indeed called. The other half is the discernment on the part of the church.
Mm-hmm.
That is why we have a very extensive seminary program whereby one who has experienced a vocation can actually test it in that setting and also be evaluated by others who will then help that person discern a vocation. I tell seminarians that you know you have a vocation to the priesthood when you hear your name called out at your ordination.
Mm. And really, not till that moment.
That's the final moment. That's a calling for it. But it takes that time to really discern it. And it's half interior realization, half exterior discernment.
Now, after your own ordination as priest for the Diocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis in 1980, you started serving in parishes, mm-hmm. first as parochial vicar and then as pastor. And I know you loved being a parish priest, that you loved being among the people and forging friendships and building faith communities. And the Catholic Times did a special edition when you first came to this diocese, and it was filled with articles that really showed the great love and the regard that the people in St. Paul and Minneapolis had for you. So I really know that you enjoyed that experience as a parish priest. But only 9 years after that, in 1999, the phone would ring and your life would take a rather dramatic change.
Oh, you mean being called to hear? Well, that's a vocation as well.
It is. What was that like to get that call?
Well, actually, that was the second call I got from the nuncio. The first was to be auxiliary bishop mm-hmm. in St. Paul. And you do not know that you are even being considered for this. You get that telephone call, and all of a sudden your life is changed. The most interesting part of that call is that you wait for a week after you have been informed before it is made public. So during those 7 days, you have to live your life as if nothing else had happened. And I remember being in the parish, and we had a scheduling meeting with my staff, and we were going over the schedule for the year ahead of us. And I remember the principal saying, well, Father, does this work for you? And all I could say is, sounds fine to me.
Why is there that 7-day?
That's to get everything lined up.
Okay.
So that when the announcement is made.
Okay. It's not like they give you 7 days to make up your mind, right?
Oh, no. I asked the nuncio on the first occasion whether I'd have a little time to consider that, and he said, yes, I'll call you back in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say about 7 minutes is what they're going to give you on that one.
Well, that was John Paul II. He was very insistent that call be answered
mm-hmm.
positively.
So in 1999, you said yes to auxiliary vicar.
And then in 2004.
The end of 2004, I said yes again. to the Diocese of Columbus. You were installed here as the 11th bishop in January 2005, and truly, we have really been blessed by that.
Thank you.
You know, and I know we're all fully aware of the times we live in are very challenging. Our beliefs as Catholics are always being threatened, and we do appreciate the courage that you've displayed standing up for the truths of our faith. So we really, truly thank you for that. And I know you're busy. You have, in addition to what you do as a bishop, you sit on all these, you know, boards and communities. You're over at Ohio Dominican University, Mother Angeline McCrory Manor, the Catholic Foundation, Kinder Women's Care Center, the Pontifical College, Josephinum, as you said, your vice chancellor there. I see at Scout Day for the bishop. You know, you just, and here at Catholic Radio, you have your own program.
Yes. Yeah.
You do the reflection. So busy, busy, busy. Are there any aspirations left for you to accomplish as a bishop?
It has to be a saint.
Yes. That's an aspiration for all of us.
That is the only real tragedy in human life is not to be a saint. So you pray, you trust God, and you really do discern and answer the call that has been given to you. I believe that unless we discern and embrace our true vocation, we're never going to be truly happy. And that hearing the voice of God. Now, of course, he's not going to give you a telephone call. He certainly isn't going to text. but there are so many ways by which he does answer that call. Through friends, through acquaintances, through experiences. And in fact, I think one of the primary responsibilities of parents is to help their children discern their vocation in life. And I think that's very important to assist in that regard.
And as we mentioned earlier in the interview, that vocation was something you were raised with, both in your family, in school.
Right.
Your family would yield two vocations. You have a brother
yes.
who's a priest. Did your father live to see two of his sons being called into a religious vocation?
Yes, my father was at my priestly ordination,
okay.
but he died 8 years before I was ordained a bishop.
Okay.
So, yes, he saw both, utterly baffled by the fact.
How did this happen?
But, in fact, there's a funny story. At St. Lawrence, my undergraduate college, I was awarded a Distinguished Alumnus Award. And I asked the president, why was I given this? And he said, this is the only way people are going to believe that a Catholic bishop came out of this school.
Oh, my gosh.
And we
funny.
Laughed about that.
Are you close to your brother, who's the priest?
Oh, yes. We're close in age. He's a year younger than I. We've always been close. In fact, when we were younger, we were kind of raised almost as twins.
Really?
Yeah.
Was there a little friendly competition or anything when you got called to serve as an auxiliary bishop?
Oh no. His response was, better him than me. No. In fact, the only real disagreement we've ever had is over the respective merits of Latin or Greek.
Ah, okay. So, and who wins out on that discussion? You, right?
Oh, I do, but I'm not going to tell you which is which.
So, you know, because Answering the Call is obviously a show about vocations, you know, we always like to ask our guests, you know, what advice do you have for a man today who might be considering this vocation? As you sit here as a person who thought God was calling you into, you know, this teaching history pathway, didn't want to hear from the Mexican sisters about being a priest, let alone here you are as a bishop, okay, in the American Catholic Church. So what advice do you have for a man who's thinking about that first step as a priest? What would you say?
Well, if you have any inkling of this, certainly speak with someone you trust, a priest or a good spiritual guide. But I say that if, in fact, you have a sense of such a vocation to the ordained ministry, you owe it to God to test it.
And doing that by?
Well, I think entering the seminary, when I finally made the decision, when I was older than most, and I do not regret my teaching, my studies, they have always assisted. But I entered the seminary, and within 6 months, I knew that I had made the right decision.
So when you first entered, you weren't 100% sure, but by 6 months, you knew.
Oh, after 6 months, I was completely at peace.
Yeah, and that's what
and
our guests tell us.
There was no going back.
You'll know. You'll know for sure whether it is or isn't your vocation, but then you don't have to look back, and you don't have to second guess.
You put your hand to the plow and not look back.
Oh, beautiful. Well, we're really, really delighted you came in to share your vocation story.
My
I've heard
privilege. Thank
bits
you.
And pieces, you know, in different things I've attended that you've been there for. So if you would kindly leave us with your blessing.
Okay. May Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and may His peace and grace come and rest upon you. Amen.
Thank you again, Bishop Campbell, for all you do for our diocese and for being here today. And God bless you on your program. I know that's touching a lot of hearts as well. This is Elizabeth Ficicelli, host of Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. You can tune in on Tuesdays and Sundays at 12:30 for another edition as we talk to our priests, our deacons, our religious sisters and brothers, and our bishop about their vocation stories. So we hope you join us again soon. Have a great week. God bless you.
Answering the Call is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Answering the Call with Elizabeth Ficicelli are available at stgabrielradio.com. Veni, Sancti.